My name is Ed Goldberg. Welcome to Author Author, an occasional series of conversations with authors touring through Portland or whom I have reached by phone. My name is Ed Goldberg, and I'm happy to speak with Bill Kroeger. Bill, welcome to All Classical.
Hi, Ed. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Title of Bill's book is Fallon's Orphans, published by Black Rose. Before we get started, tell me before we turn on the machine here that you won an award for some short stories. Can you tell us about that?
Yep. Yeah, Ed, I've had 5 short stories published, 2 quite a while back, but then 3 more recently. And I entered one in an editor's choice contest with a magazine outfit called Scars Publications, and I won.
Wow,
and so my story is, they printed a book, it just came out this last month, and my story is at the very beginning of the book.
What's the title of the book?
Oh, geez.
You got to know these things.
It's something redacted.
Okay.
I can't remember.
Well, your name is Bill Kroeger, and the last name is spelled K-R-O-G-E-R.
If they go to Scars Publications and look up the writers, there's 3 of my short stories are there, and you can actually go read them.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Is this your first novel?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Fallon's Orphans. You got to tell us who Fallon is and why he has a bunch of orphans.
Well, Fallon was a playboy for a number of years. He's an orphan, and he doesn't even know who his parents were. He was adopted by a couple in Nevada, an older couple, and when he was 12. And they die in an accident, and he inherits their estate. It's $100 million estate, big estate. But in order to take control of it, he's got to take over and run this small museum that has been their pride and joy for years and turn it into the Black. So he goes in and tries to find something that's going to bring paying customers into the museum. And he finds this old cup dating back to 300s AD. In fact, it's got engraved in it 311 AD. And so he just makes up a story that it belonged to Constantine the Great, sends out press releases. Well, in my story, there really was such a cup, and it's been missing for 800 years since the Fourth Crusade in Istanbul. The organization responsible for its care all these centuries is descended from Constantine's bodyguards, and it's called the Defenders of Constantine sect. So they come and steal the cup. And he goes, what the heck? So he sends his curator from the museum, a very attractive woman, to go over and do some research on the book. On the theft. She finds out that the cup is real, that this sect exists, and they're trying to be underground because they have an arch enemy. It's a Muslim group called Soldiers of Suleiman. Actually, it's more like a mafia group than Muslim, but it's just
a criminal enterprise, basically.
Yeah, it is. So she goes over and finds out about this and starts talking about it, so they kidnap her.
Is this Julie?
Julie,
yeah.
Yep. They kidnap her, and Fallon and Julie's daughter, Sarah, and Fallon's best friend from the orphan's home, an Indian, everybody just calls Chief, and he's just retired from the army. They go to Europe to find her. The grand defender of the sect doesn't want this to escalate to where it's heading.
Is he the high poobah of the whole sect?
Yeah, the sect, yeah, that's right. They're called the grand defender.
Uh-huh.
And his home is outside of Istanbul. He invites Fallon to come to his home, and then he figures the best way to keep them from talking is to co-opt him, basically, and bring him into the sect.
Yeah.
So Fallon actually, who's always wanted a big family, and this is sort of like the gypsies or the Roma of Eastern Europe, he agrees to do it. And they give him a mission. They have a village in northeastern India, a small village called Bengali, whose main income right there is a tanning factory that's owned by the Muslim group. And they want to expand their factory, but the only place they can expand it is to take over this village. And they don't want to spend any money for the houses and stuff, so they have been injecting excess hexavalent chromium into the water supply to kill off people, and several people have died already. And so they asked Fallon if he would take on that problem and solve it.
Yeah, normally I don't trade too heavily on the plot because, you know, I want readers to find these things out for themselves.
Right, right.
But whatever you want to tell us is okay with me.
Yeah, so. No, I'll just stop right there. It takes place in Cairo, Egypt, because that's where the head guy that runs the tanning factory lives. Takes place in Cairo, Egypt. It takes place in India. Because of people chasing people, it ends up going to Paris and Venice, and of course then around Lake Tahoe, Nevada, where his home is.
Carson City. I was wondering, why the heck is this thing in Carson
City?
Oh,
I know. Yeah. Well, I grew up there.
Okay. Have you been to all the places you described?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I'm retired from the military reserves army. I was retired as a colonel. Because of my military, I was on active duty for a number of years. Because of my military and then just because of my love of travel, I've been to 22 countries in the world. Mm-hmm. So I've been to all these places that I write about. So I talk about them and throw little things in here and there because I've actually been there and seen the things.
Okay, stupid question. Where's your favorite place?
I think I love Paris.
Yeah. Well, sounds like a good thing, good song title.
Paris and Venice. I love Venice.
I love Venice also. Yeah. We could agree on that one for sure. Yeah. Not that I don't like Paris.
Though. Right.
The soldiers of Suleiman, who are referred to archly, I think, as SS, yeah. It just increases their evilness. They have their fingers in a lot of pies around the world, and the tannery in Bengali is one of their businesses. The guy in Cairo is a man named Hassan. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, Hassan is, he's arrogant, he's vicious, he's corrupt, and those are his better qualities, actually.
Yeah.
And he has a number two named Akub, who is almost equally as corrupt, but he's also ambitious and resentful of Hassan. Have I described that correctly?
That's right. That's perfect.
Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, Hassan actually is from Istanbul. He was very ambitious, and so he went out and basically did the dirty work for the soldiers of Suleiman, the SS. But they promoted him, and he's ended up in Cairo running the operations in Egypt. They do have some legitimate enterprises, too, and one of them is a really nice hotel in Egypt, and he has the penthouse and lives in this penthouse up in Egypt. I patterned that after a hotel that I stayed at when I went to Egypt, to Cairo, you know, several years back. Just a gorgeous place. Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't know if I'd want to be traveling over there a lot right now. I think it's kind of dangerous, but when I was there, it was just before all this, you know, all the riots and things started up, so it was a lot safer. Mm-hmm. Akwab is a typical guy. He's not a lot of education, a lot of street smarts he has. He worked his way up through the ranks to become the number two. He's pretty ruthless himself. He doesn't, almost a sociopath. He doesn't think too much about killing people and doing bad things. And his dream is to become the number one in Cairo, and he's always bird-dogging Hassan, you know, to try to do things. In fact, when Hassan gets into some problems, you know, he's laughing about it.
This guy reminds me of Iago. You know, he's just jealous.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's jealous of the number one guy. He wants to bring the number one guy down. And it's partly jealousy and it's partly just being evil.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good assessment.
Okay. Tell us about Ramazan.
Well, Ramazan is an interesting character. He's not the top guy, but he's one of the top guys in the SS, the bad guys. And he's an albino also. I did some reading about albinos and I didn't realize it, but their eyes are lighter colored and they twitch a lot. And so I think I have a little thing there that says his eyes twitched like a snake ready to strike, you know, because that's kind of what he is. But he's a big guy. I see him as a heavy man, tries to be devout. In fact, one time he calls Hassan in to meet with him and they meet in the Blue Mosque, you know, for Friday prayers. And then they go out and get in the car and talk. And they have a saying in the SS, you know, that or else. If anybody says or else to you like that, it means you better do whatever they said or you're going to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets an or else on what's going on in India because there's a lot of problems.
Esther. Esther dies very early in the book, like within the first few pages. What was her relationship to Fallon and what got her?
When Fallon initially agreed to join the sect, they had some celebrations, kind of a big party and stuff, and he met Esther for the first time. She's quite a lady. Tough as nails. She's been on a mission for the sect recently and had to kill somebody. It turned out to be the son of Ramazan, the youngest son of Ramazan, and he wants revenge. And so she gets killed early on in the book. But I did that. You know, I wrote this. This is the third iteration of the book. I wrote the book 4 years ago. I started it, actually, my research and writing 4 years ago. I sent it out, my first draft, and nobody was interested in it. So I redid a sort of a sequel and sent it out. Nobody was interested in that. I wrote a screenplay and pitched it at the Willamette Writers Convention to four Hollywood types, and I knew I was in trouble when the first one who came out was younger than the characters in my book.
You know, they say you really get old when the cops start looking at you.
So I sat down a year ago January and just took all the advice and the criticism I'd gotten and sat down and just redid the whole thing. I really paid a lot of attention to keep the book story moving really fast. I think it moves very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And to character development. That was the two complaints that I'd had earlier. So I really made it this book zing and worked on character development. But you know, Esther wasn't even part of it when I was doing that. And then I was trying to think of something that would make people feel exciting about it. I read some books, novels, and there was exciting stuff at the very beginning of it, you know, that it sort of catches you and makes you want to read more. So I came up with the idea of Esther and, and having her done away.
Mm-hmm. What Hitchcock used to call a MacGuffin, so yeah. They can get the story rolling.
That's right.
Yeah. Before Fallon goes to India, he goes back to Carson City to hang out with his buds, his fellow orphans in Carson City. We get Julie and Sarah, her daughter, Julie who was kidnapped and rescued, and we get the chief, and then a guy named George Shaw. He seems to be the odd guy out here.
I like George. George is a very brainy attorney. He's an international expert on finances and stuff, which will come into play in the sequel, I think, because I'm thinking about a plot for the sequel already. But George is in his early 50s. He's always wanted excitement in his life, and so he's decided to sell his law practice. And Fallon, at the same time, asked him if he would come to work with him, basically being part of Fallon's team to do things that the sect needs done. So he jumps at it. You know, he says, where do you want me to go? You know, the first place is Julie is going to Cairo. So Fallon asks George to go to Cairo to be a backup to Julie in that. So he says, I'm your man in Cairo. You know, he's excited about it. Of course, he ends up getting much more excitement than he had planned.
Right.
You know, later on in the book.
That's, you know, being in your 50s is it's an interesting time to start living out your fantasies.
Yes.
The tannery, leather factory in India, where eventually they all wind up. There's poison in the environment from the hexavalent chromium, but it's not incidental. It's not just like part of the process. They're actually poisoning the soil and the water, yes?
In order to do the tanning, you need hexavalent chromium. So it's a common thing. In fact, I care about our environment. And, of course, India has a serious problem with hexavalent chromium from all the tanning factories up and down the Ganges River.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the federal government, the national government, has had to address it several times. It's interesting that the tanneries are mostly owned by Muslims, and so consequently the river is not sacred to them, but the river is sacred to the Hindus, who mostly are the workers in the plants. They use hexavalent chromium to do their job, and a lot of it just gets dumped into the river, and it's polluting the heck out of the river, or it has. They've tried to clean it up, and I think they've had some success, but I think it's still a continuing problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of wanted to point that out a little bit. But in my story, they're using excess and actually putting it into the water supply and stuff to kill off the villagers.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that all these are taking place on the Ganges, which is a holy river, which people bathe in to get rid of their sins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a really polluted river.
I'd like to remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Bill Kroger. His last name is spelled K-R-O-G-E-R. The title of the book is Fallon's Orphans, and it's published by Black Rose. Where can we get this book?
It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You know, the places like that, all the ebook sites, certainly at the publisher itself. You can go to Amazon and type in my name or type in Fallon's Orphans and it'll come up that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to
get it into Powell Books, but they have a process. Black Rose Writing is not one of the huge publishers.
Good
right. publisher, but it's not one of the big ones. It's in Texas. So consequently, they don't send books out all over like some of the big publishers do. And so I have to go through a process to get into Powell Books. And I've sent them a book, and they have to go through a committee, and hopefully I'll hear from them soon, and that it'll be in Powell Books. I have it in Jacobson's Books in Hillsborough right now, and I'm hoping to get it into Annie Bloom's pretty soon.
Okay. When Fallon is in India, he meets Rachel. Rachel is, of course, the dream girl that appears in a lot of these books, you know, the wish fulfillment for all the guys reading the book. Tell us about Rachel.
Well, Rachel is an interesting person. You know, he's coming off of the death of Esther. When he sees Rachel, he has some feelings for her because she's an extremely attractive lady, big, tall, and really, you know, well-built. She's a warrior of the sect, and so she's been trained to do a lot of nasty stuff if it has to come up. But he has these guilt feelings for a little while, and then pretty soon they dissipate. But Rachel, at one point, some bad guys do some things, and she goes after him and pulls out her sect knife and does a number on one of the guys.
She's a sect warrior.
Yeah, she's a sect warrior. She's been from birth. Was raised to be a warrior in the sect. And it's an interesting relationship. Her father had been in charge of sect operations in India, and so consequently she spent time in India and can speak, you know, Bengali a little bit and of course Hindu. But she's making her permanent home now in the Scandinavian countries.
Mm-hmm. Being tall and blonde, that works for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she dyed her hair for this assignment, right. So it's black.
Two characters, both of whom I liked and become important in the story, are the mayor in Bengali and Ibrahim. Tell us about them.
Well, the mayor and Ibrahim are two separate people.
Right.
And the mayor is a pretty cool guy. He got his education at the university in Calcutta before it became Kolkata. He met his wife, the woman, and she was from the village. he was a salesperson, and he always wanted to be a big wheel in a, what is that, in a small pond?
Yeah, big
pond.
Fish in a small pond.
Small pond, yeah. So anyway, they decide to go to Bengali because that's where she grew up. She was raised there. And so he went there and almost immediately became the mayor. And so he's been mayor for a long time and helping the people and trying to do. And they have a medical clinic that serves up and down the river in their area right there. Ibrahim is an interesting man. He's a Muslim, one of the few Muslims in the village. He runs the grocery store. And so people from up and down the river come and shop at his grocery store. And he's extended credit to people and a lot of times just eating it, you know, because they don't have the money to pay and stuff. So
he's a good guy.
He's a good guy. But John of the sect, who's one of the top warriors in the sect who comes to help Fallon, has been bred from birth to hate Muslims. So at one point, Ibrahim saves his life, but he gets wounded in the process. And so John is kind of perplexed about this. So he goes in late at night at the hospital or the clinic, and he and Ibrahim talk for 3 pages about the differences between Christianity and in the Muslim faith. Mm-hmm. In order to do that, I wanted to have a little education in it. And so I read four different books about, including the history of Muhammad, you know, but I read 4 different books about Islam and stuff. It was quite, kind of an eye-opener, you know, to do that. I think those 3 pages are good. I hope they are.
Yeah. The sect is really the lesser of two evils in a way. I mean, they have their own mission, but they're not above doing some fairly shady things themselves.
Yeah. After Fallon agrees to join the sect, sort of in the heat of the moment, so to speak, sounds like a good deal, so he does it. Like I said in the book, it's sort of like touching the tar baby just to see what would happen. But once he's in, he's beginning to realize that the sect is a bit of a mafia organization, too, and they got a lot of some pretty rough, tough people, and it's for him to leave wouldn't be, it would be detrimental to his long-term health. So he's, in some ways, is almost trapped.
Yeah, they remind me a little bit of the Knights Templar or somebody. Julie goes to Cairo, ostensibly as a news person, to interview Hassan, and an awkward situation arises. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want to leave that for the reader to discover? Well, you know, Rona and Sarah, that's the situation I'm talking about.
No, I could talk about that.
Okay.
Julie's daughter is Sarah. She's 16 years old. She's going to a private school in Italy. Her roommate turns out to be the daughter of Hassan, the bad guy in Cairo. Unbeknownst to everybody, you know, they haven't put 2 to 2 together. Rona, Hassan's daughter, has invited Rachel to come down to Cairo to spend the holidays with them. And so they do. And so when Julie shows up in the penthouse, posing as a reporter, trying to find some vulnerabilities to go after Hassan, lo and behold, her daughter shows up. Because right away, she realizes, oh, it made sense from what they had talked about, but they just hadn't realized it. And so they have to sort of fake it. But it turns out to be a good thing because Rachel helps her out and sort of becomes one of the members, which is what she's wanted to be all along, an active member in the Fallon's Orphans.
Back in Bengali, a plan begins to emerge. And the plan involves something, Dharna, am I saying that correctly?
Dharna, yeah.
And the first thing I thought of was, wow, this is a lot like what Gandhi used to do. And it turns out that it's exactly what Gandhi used to do. So what's the plan here?
The SS, the soldiers of Suleiman, like the sect, shun publicity. I mean, you know, the media and publicity are one of the worst things that can happen. If the authorities in Turkey or anywhere else find out that these groups exist, they're going to go after them and they're going to be in trouble, because they're sort of like little governments operating under the radar. They figured the best thing that can happen in Bengali, in the village, is to bring a lot of attention to it. Well, the best way to do that is like Gandhi did when he marched across India, is to get a lot of people there protesting. And so they start this thing called a Dharna, which is a sit-in. Technically, it's a fast also, but this doesn't include a fast. It's basically a sit-in. Because the villagers are so poor up and down the river, Fallon goes and you know, a couple of teams go out and talk to the villagers about them bringing people in for the protest, and they can't afford it. You know, they have to sort of eke out a living and stuff. So Fallon, who's got a lot of money, Fallon agrees to pay him a wage, you know, maybe $5 a day or $3 a day or something.
Plus food. Yeah.
To do that. And so they say, oh, yeah. So nothing flat. They get 1,000 people there. And, of course, that brings the media, including TV cameras and everything. And so that's, of course, the worst nightmare that the SS could have.
Because things don't go the way the SS wants, Hassan is sent to Bengali to try to sort things out. Maybe we shouldn't say too much about that.
Yeah, I think I'd probably not get into that too much.
Okay. Meanwhile, Julie and Sarah go from Cairo to Jerusalem, and George accompanies them. a real thing ensues on the street in Jerusalem and in the streets of the old city, and someone is killed and people have to flee. Can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, I don't want to talk too much about it. It turns out that Hassan has some stolen paintings. So Julie discovers this because her background, she has a degree in art history, and her background is in, and she also helps run a gallery for Fallon. She immediately spots these paintings and verifies, but she has to prove that they're stolen. So they go through a rigmarole and stuff to prove that they're up in Hassan's penthouse apartment, and it gets published. And so Hassan, you know, is livid. He wants to get these ladies. He's the kind of guy that for something like that, he would kill you in an instant. And so they have to flee for their life, and they're in a panic. They're trying to figure out where to go, and Julie comes up with the idea of going to Jerusalem, figuring that, you know, the Muslims might not go after them or come after them there. Of course, that doesn't happen because Aqab, you know, the number two guy, and one of his henchmen come after them to try to do him in. And a number of things happen in Jerusalem.
Yeah. It was a fun scene, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
This guy really interested me, too. First of all, I don't know what a Bura Sahib is. You have to describe that term because it's used in the book.
From what my understanding is, it's like one of the chief officials, you know, the top guy. And this guy in my book is, in fact, Bura Sahib of the West Bengal district, the top guy in the whole district.
And his name is Mahesh Smythe or Smith. How do we pronounce
Smythe.
It?
Smythe.
It is Smythe.
British.
Which means, of course, that he's of mixed heritage.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's helped him get ahead because he's lighter skinned than everybody else, and he has a nice English accent.
And he's got relatives in the parliament in England.
Yeah. So he turns out to be a bit malleable also, doesn't he?
Yes. He's on the payroll of the SS, you know, which is not uncommon. I read a couple of books also about India and what's been going on, and they've had a serious corruption problem. In fact, they do today, and it's causing them a lot of problems even today. It was interesting. It started basically with Nehru, that he came in and made a law that the civil service, unless it was for murder or something like that, couldn't be fired. And so things just started becoming corrupt because they were totally in a secure position. Mm-hmm. But it's gotten a lot worse. Well, anyway, so it's not uncommon for people to be on the take over their government officials. And Mahesh has certainly taken money from the SS and stuff. But then the problem gets to be when he has to, you know, earn the money and basically stop what's going on in the Bengali village.
You know the word bakshish, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's the payments for services, I
that's
suppose.
That's right.
The best way to put it.
I was in India one time. I was on R&R from Vietnam, and I went to India, went on a little tour. And every time we got off the bus, there was a lot of people there pushing at you, trying to get money, alms and stuff, you know, for the poor. And they were saying bakshish.
Yeah. Well, it's always money for the poor, you know, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot more of the story, and we're running out of time, but the story goes to Paris. It goes all around the world trying to bring down the SS, or the sect is trying to bring down the SS. Wow, there's an attack in a restaurant in Paris that I thought was very cool also.
Oh, yeah.
And even a hit on Warrior John, who's the chief warrior of the sect. And the thing I liked about that is it keeps getting bucked down the hierarchy, you know, to lower and lower people. Well, I'm not going to do this, but I'll have my guy do it. And then the guy says, well, I'm not going to do this, but I can find somebody who'll do it. I thought that was very funny because it seemed so real.
Oh, yeah. In fact, that section, you know, when I wrote the screenplay, it really, really helped me with dialogue because it's mostly dialogue. And you have to think about the whole thing differently because it's all visual. And so that section that you're talking about between Mahesh and his deputy, I think the dialogue in that, you know, I'm not bragging, I hope, but I really like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back and read it every once in a while. I think, my God, it's like I didn't write it. It was like somebody else wrote it.
that's called the creative process.
Yeah.
Okay, so you told us you're working on a sequel. What can we expect? When can we expect to see that?
Well, I would say sometime in late 2015.
Okay.
It's going to involve the same characters, you know, at least the team. It starts out with twin girls that belong to the sect in Istanbul get kidnapped and sent off into the illegal sex trade to Eastern Europe, and then they end up in Honduras. So it's going to jump over to Central America. I spent 6 months in Honduras with the military and traveled all over the country and got to know it pretty well. It since has gotten very violent down there, so I'll have to update it and talk about that. But part of it's going to take place in Honduras, so that could be interesting.
Yeah, it's a toss-up as to whether El Salvador or Honduras is more dangerous.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to tell us before we wrap this up?
No, it's just I love to write. It's a great process. Anybody else might want to write. The best advice I could pass on is to have perseverance. Because there were so many times that I got rejected and became depressed about it, you know. But people kept telling me, keep doing it, keep doing it. Took me 4 years, but I got it published. By the way, last August, I pitched it again to 5 Hollywood types at the Willamette Writers Conference, trying to get them to take my book. And 3 of them said they'd like to read it and see it. And so I sent it off to them, and I'm in contact with them. And so you never know. One of these days, I might be able to convince somebody to make a movie out of it, which would be exciting.
Good luck.
And I've done a screenplay, so I could maybe do another one.
Yeah, but remember what Walter Mosley once told me. He says, if you sell your book to Hollywood, say goodbye to it. You'll never recognize it when it goes up on the screen. So. I've been speaking with Bill Kroeger. His last name is spelled K-R-O-G-E-R. The title of the book is Fallon's Orphans. It's a paperback available from Black Rose. Looking forward to your next book, Bill.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate being here.
You've been listening to Author, Author, produced at the studios of All Classical KQAC-FM in Portland. My name is Ed Goldberg. You can find these programs at our website, allclassical.org/author. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back soon.